here on the Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, sports fans. This is the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington, filling in this week for Sonny Young. It's Wednesday, September 30th. Thank you for tuning in. We got a great show for you lined up, so do not reduce the volume. Tonight is the first game of the NBA Finals. LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers will face off against the Miami Heat. 16-time All-Star LeBron is looking for his fourth NBA title and his first as a Laker after winning previously with the Heat and the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is 35-year-old LeBron's eighth finals appearance in as many years, but it's like no other given the restrictions of the coronavirus pandemic. The players have been in a bubble for weeks at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex near Orlando, Florida, shut out from the outside world and playing without the usual jam-packed crowds. LeBron says it's been the toughest challenge of his career.
It's probably been the most challenging thing I've ever done as far as a professional, as far as committing to something and actually, making it through. I knew what I was coming, what we were coming here for. I would be lying if I sat up here and knew that everything inside the bubble, the toll that it would take on your mind and your body and everything else. Cause it's been extremely tough. I'm here for one reason and one reason only, and that's to compete for a championship. And that was my mindset. Once I entered the bubble, once I entered the quarantine process, the first 2 days, and then right from our first practice, my mindset was to, if I'm going to be here, make the most of it and see what you can do and lock in on what the main thing is. And the main thing was for us to finish the season and compete for a championship. So that's just been my mindset, throughout these, I don't even know how many days it is. Whatever how many days it is, it feels like 5 years. So it really doesn't matter. But I've been as locked in as I've ever been in my career.
The Lakers are favorites in the best-of-seven series against the Heat. Playing the Heat carries special meaning for LeBron because he won his first title with Miami in 2012.
I think every part of anybody's individual life, when they was able to grow, it never leaves you. And that's no different from me having my 4 years in Miami, being around, with that culture, growing. You guys don't realize, talk about it, but I went to Miami when I was 25 years old. I was 25, and I spent I was 25 to 29. So I was still growing. I was still a kid and still trying to figure out who I am as a person and as a man growing while still trying to compete for a championship every single year. And I grew and they allowed me to grow and we pushed each other every single day. And like I said, I fit perfectly, in that culture because I work just as hard as anybody else. I show up to work and, I don't leave until I feel like I was as great as I was. And do you always become successful out of that? Are you always going to win? No, it doesn't happen like that, but you're able to sleep a little bit better at night. When you punch your clock. And how am I different today than 2 years ago when I entered the finals? A little bit more gray hair in my beard.
All eyes are on LeBron, but Miami Heat's Jimmy Butler isn't fazed. He says the Heat are ready to take on the Lakers.
He's still at the top of his game at 35, at 26, at 21. He's still dominating. You've had to go through him at 26, 35, probably at 49. But he's shown why he is the player that he is, why he's had the career and the legacy that he's continually building. And it's not going to be an easy task these next couple of games. The if anybody's up for that task, the Miami Heat are.
Now let's look at football. Tottenham Hotspur overcame visitors Chelsea 5-4 in a penalty shootout to progress in the League Cup. An urgent trip to the locker room for Tottenham Hotspur's Eric Dier led to the sight of the defender running off the pitch during Tuesday's League Cup, with coach Jose Mourinho chasing down the tunnel after him. Mourinho soon returned to his dugout, and Dier swiftly made it back onto the pitch. Here's Mourinho on the incident.
You can imagine what happened for him to leave the pitch. You can imagine what happened. I knew it. I was just pushing him to come back as soon as possible because no more changes and one player less. Is the consequence of something not human that he did, which was to play two matches completely dehydrated, tired, no energy in the muscles, completely dead. Of course, he's not playing Thursday, because I would definitely kill him.
Chelsea's new goalkeeper, Edouard Mendy, had a confidence display. Chelsea appeared to be heading into the quarterfinals thanks to a 19th-minute strike from Timo Werner, but Dier helped Eric Lamela find an equalizer in the 83rd minute, finishing from close range after controlling a cross from Sergio Reguilón. In the ensuing shootout, Dier scored the first spot kick of penalties. Chelsea's Mason Mount struck the post to miss the decisive fifth penalty after every other spot kick had been converted. The victory was revenge for the Spurs for a 2019 League Cup semi-final second-leg defeat to Chelsea on penalties, and Spurs boss Jose Mourinho got one over his former Chelsea player, Frank Lampard.
With Frank, the most important thing is my feelings to him. Is more important than any words that we change. My feelings to him are, I will always owe him everything that he gave me. He gave me everything he had as a player, and I never forget that. So my feelings towards him will be always feelings of how much I owe him for such an incredible player, friend, and professional that he was. The only thing that I was telling him was that was an opinion. Just an opinion of an old coach to a young, talented coach, which was, when the players need us is when they are losing. When they are winning, we don't need to be the protagonists of the touchline. We need to be there when they are losing. And the last match, when they were losing 3-0, I felt sorry for him because he was really, really sad and quiet in his chair. So it was just, in terms of football, I have nothing to teach him. He knows football up and down. He's a fantastic coach. It was just an opinion. Stay on the touchline when your team is losing and stay calm when your team is winning.
Here's Chelsea manager Lampard.
We were having some fun on the line. I get on well with Jose, and I think he said that to me. I commented on the fact that he seemed to speak to the referee more than he was speaking to his players. So just a moment with us. I've got a huge amount of respect for Jose. No matter what we say on the touchline, I think he probably was feeling the sense of the first half and how it was. But all was very well at the end of the game. That will never change.
Liverpool's new midfielder, Thiago Alcantara, has tested positive for COVID-19 and is self-isolating with minor symptoms, the Premier League champions said Tuesday. The Spaniard, who joined from Bayern Munich earlier this month, was ruled out of Liverpool's next two games after missing Monday's 3-1 victory over Arsenal at Anfield. Liverpool will host Arsenal in the last 16 of the League Cup on Thursday and return to league action on Sunday with a trip to Aston Villa. Portugal international Ruben Dias completed his transfer to Manchester City from Benfica on Tuesday, signing a 6-year contract with the English Premier League club. The 23-year-old central defender moves to Etihad Stadium on a contract of around £65 million.
It feels really well. For many years, I've been watching the Premier League, and for these years just passed, I've seen Man City won, I've seen Man City in top, so for me to be here, it means I'm on top now. That's what I wanted, and I'm really glad to be here. For me to have the opportunity to be in a club like this, in this league, it's anything I could ever wanted, and so I'm happy to be here, but also ready to start and a lot of ambition to get it started. Yeah.
Dias joined Benfica in 2008 and progressed to the first team, helping the Eagles win the Portuguese Primeira Liga in 2019. An international debut came in 2018, and Dias was a key member of the Portugal team that won the inaugural UEFA Nations League last year. Argentina international Nicolas Otamendi has moved in the other direction, joining Benfica for £13.7 million. Heading to the French Open of tennis, U.S. superstar Serena Williams has pulled out of the tournament at Roland Garros ahead of her second-round match against Svetlana Pironkova. The 23-time Grand Slam champion came into the tournament nursing an Achilles tendon injury she picked up during her semifinal defeat at the U.S. Open earlier this month.
I love playing in Paris. I actually adore the clay. It's so, I don't know, fun for me. And I really wanted to give an effort here. So it's my Achilles that didn't have enough time to properly heal after the Open. I was able to get it somewhat better, but just looking long term in this tournament, will I be able to get through enough matches? And so for me, I don't think I could, and struggling to walk. So that's kind of a telltale sign that I should try to recover.
Serena was sluggish during the first set of her first round victory over Christy Ahn, but she won the second set, and there was no indication that she was considering her future in the tournament. But today, Serena said she did feel problems during her first round match.
I had to focus on walking straight so I wasn't limping, and I tried. You know, I always give 100%, and everyone knows that, but maybe even more than 100 if that's possible. But and that is, I take solace in that. And I think Achilles is a real injury that you don't want to play with, because that is not good if it gets worse. I feel like my body is willing. I just literally, this is not a nagging injury. This is an acute injury. So if it was my knee, that would be more really devastating for me. But this is something that just happened, and it's super acute. And that's totally different. So I feel like my body is actually doing really, really well. And I just ran into, for lack of a better word, bad timing and bad luck, really, in New York. So it happened, but it doesn't. My body is actually doing really, really well. And I can never do too much sitting because I've been working for over 20-something years.
Serena estimated she needs 4 to 6 weeks to recover, which is likely to mean the end of her season.
Yeah, I think I need 4 to 6 weeks of sitting and doing nothing, at least 2 weeks of just sitting down. And then from that, after that 2 weeks, I've been told that I need to start doing a little training. So I think I'm going to call it more than likely. I don't know, you know, doing the math on that, I don't know if I'll be able to play another tournament this year. So I'm definitely going to take that first initial 2 weeks of just nothing, and then start from the next 2 weeks, and then from that I'll get a little bit better, but it will give me a lot of time to fully recover for the future.
The 39-year-old insisted that although her year may be over, retirement is not in her plans.
I love playing tennis, obviously. I love competing, and I love being out here. It's my job. It's been my job, and I'm pretty good at it still. So until I feel that I'm not good at it, then I'll be like, oh, okay. And I'm so close to some things, I just feel like I'm almost there. So I think that's what keeps me going.
Elsewhere on the women's side, Belarusian former world's number one Victoria Azarenka lost in straight sets to Slovakia's 26-year-old Anna Karolina Shmedlova in the second round. 10th seed Azarenka was runner-up at the U.S. Open this month, but she struggled with the cold and damp conditions at Roland Garros in Paris. The 161st-ranked Shmedlova nailed a forehand winner to bring a match point, and won as Azarenka fired her 37th unforced error of the contest. Third seed Elena Svitolina recovered from a mid-match meltdown to beat Mexican qualifier Renata Zarazua and advanced to the third round. Meanwhile, Czech second seed Karolina Plíšková managed to rein in her own errors and found a way past Egyptian qualifier Maiar Sharif. Former world's number one Plíšková had 27 unforced errors and hit 6 double faults in the first set to the 24-year-old Sharif, who was playing in her first Grand Slam draw. Plíšková slammed her racket on the court when she lost that first set, but she got it together in the next two sets to seal the match. Here's Plíšková.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, conditions not easy, and I think she also played a little better than I maybe thought because I didn't know much. But, I mean, let's not talk about my level. I think there's big room for improvement, but it is what it is, and I'm in the next round, which counts.
Number 5 seed Kiki Bertens and number 27 seed Ekaterina Alexandrova also advanced. On the men's side, Serbian Novak Djokovic got his quest for an 18th Grand Slam title back on track as he commenced his French Open campaign with a drama-free victory over Mikhail Yimmer. It was just over 3 weeks since Djokovic was ejected from the U.S. Open for hitting a line judge with a ball, but he said he's pushed that incident out of his mind.
I have not had any traces of New York in my mind. I'm over it. Honestly, forgot about it, and I'm not thinking about it. I thought I started off extremely well. You know, winning 6-love first set is the best possible way to start a Grand Slam. So, you know, this is exactly what my intentions will be, you know, trying to get off the blocks very, very strong, with a good intensity, obviously, because, you know, players in the early rounds have nothing to lose, come out, you know, and you could see, you know, there's quite a few surprises in the first round. You know, you have Medvedev out, you have, you know, some big players, and it tells a lot about these conditions, you know, and that it's, you know, it's very challenging for a top player, especially, you know, coming in as a favorite and then, you know, needing to win and expected to win. I think that's why the opening rounds are crucial.
Elsewhere on the men's side, number 2 seed Rafael Nadal, 3 seed Dominique Thiem, 12th seed Diego Schwartzman, and 16th seed Stanley Wawrinka all advanced to the next round. 5th seeded Stefanos Tsitsipas of Greece was down 2 sets to Spain's Jaime Munar before battling back for the win. Here's Tsitsipas.
I felt like I had control even though I was 2 sets to love down. I, on the third set, when this switch happened, I felt like I have chances of winning. I wasn't really thinking about anything else. I know the past few weeks have been a little bit difficult with certain losses that I had and a bit unusual, to be honest. But I'm trying to learn from them, grow from them, and trying to put them behind and continue stronger.
On Wednesday, play was briefly interrupted when a French fighter jet broke the sound barrier over Paris, causing a sonic boom. France's defense ministry said the jet was scrambled to join a commercial jet that had lost contact with air traffic control. The Badminton Federation of Nigeria has received 4,000 face masks and 11 infrared thermometers from 2 Chinese firms. The companies have been in partnership with the federation since 2018. Francis Orbe is president of the federation. He spoke to reporter Iron Mike Mbonye about the donation.
Yes, the Badminton Federation of Nigeria, BFN, just received donation of 4,000 face masks and 11 infrared thermometers from two Chinese firms, the Beijing Commercial Service Center and Global Hing Consulting Companies. These two groups have been in partnership with the Federation since the year 2018, and they decided to step in at this very, very, very critical time when we are just trying to get over the COVID-19 pandemic. And one of the things that is very important to the Federation right now is how to gradually see to the reopening of the sport, putting in mind and putting at the back of our mind the safety of our players, which is very paramount. So the two groups decided to step in and support the Federation to be able to actualize this dream of making it possible for our players to begin to come back to training and, of course, come back to competition. And this generous donation is going to go a long way to helping the Federation to achieve this. We are looking forward to more corporate bodies doing this to help. You know, it has not been easy with the ravaging of the COVID-19 pandemic across the world. And in this time of, it's a kind of recovery or trying to get back to normal. And anything, no matter how small, will go a long way to achieve that. So we are really grateful. And as a federation, we are quite excited about this kind of intervention. And we look forward to getting more from these two groups and other organizations and corporate bodies who are willing to help and to assist.
With the lifting of the ban on sporting activities in Nigeria, when will the Badminton Federation resume activities?
With the lifting of the ban on sporting activities, especially the non-contact sports by the Federal Ministry of Youth and Sports Development, the Federation has swung into action. We're actually waiting and we're actually proactive. Let me put it that way. We didn't wait. Even before the ministry lifted, we're following the news and following events to know, to prepare ourselves. So we immediately issued the BFN COVID-19 SOP, that is the standard operating procedure, that has the protocols and the guidelines for training and also for competition. And then the 10 game changers to reduce the risk of contacting or transferring the virus. All this we have had to do with a lot of education and sensitization of our members, so that, you know, we want them to realize that, yes, we all want to go back to playing, but the safety and the well-being of our players is of utmost importance, and we need to put that in the front burner. So we don't want people to take unnecessary risks. And we are going about making sure that we pass this information to members, educating them and preparing them. Because even if you get all these items to help mitigate, it's for people to be willing and ready to use them. So we also realize that that is very important. So we are preparing. Actually, training has started, and we are monitoring and following up. And we're also putting in place things that will make us also compliant and ready to take on competitions. So the Federation is doing everything to ensure that all these things are put in place, and we'll be back to the courts very soon.
Are you in contact with players and officials as you prepare for the Tokyo Olympic Games?
For our players on the road to Tokyo Olympics, even during the lockdown, we're in touch with them, because we realized that we didn't want a situation where the lockdown was over and they all come out looking very big, fat and unfit. So we knew the importance of keeping fit, and we encouraged them, reached out to them, had programs run online to keep our players fit. And with the gradual lifting of the ban on restriction on movement and all that, and also to training, they've started training. We've made available to them equipment like shuttlecocks, and we're also in touch with their coaches. So we're making sure they don't lack anything, and because we need them to be in top shape, so that once we want to go back into competition, they won't be struggling. So basically, the Federation has been in touch with our players and their coaches, and we are looking forward very soon, hopefully before the end of the year, to have one or two competitions. We are still looking at the modalities, putting the safety first, and which is very important to us. So basically, we are following up with our players, and we hope to keep them in good shape, ready to start and complete the qualifiers for the Olympics when that starts early in the year. But between now and that time, we are going to make sure that they are in good shape, keeping fit, and also try to organize one or two competitions for them and keep them on course to qualify for the Olympics.
That was Francis Orbe, president of the Badminton Federation of Nigeria, speaking to reporter Iron Mike Mbone. And now let's look at athletics. As with every sport around the world, athletics has had to adjust to the new world order of the coronavirus pandemic. But World Athletics, the sports international governing body, has announced plans for an inaugural World Athletics Road Running Championship in 2023. Reporter Andy Edwards in London reflects on the significance of this move.
World Athletics and its president, Sebastian Coe, have been taking some cool, hard looks at the state of the sport even before the pandemic struck. Some of the changes have not found favour, but in general, I believe they deserve credit for being prepared to consider what would make athletics, both track and field and road running, a viable entity both for hardcore fans and the general public in the 21st century. Now, this proposal for a World Athletics Road Running Championships from 2023 was approved at the recent council meeting of the governing body. What it means is that, in addition to the long-established World Half Marathon Championships, which this year take place in Gdynia in Poland in just over 2 weeks, there will be a new event in the form of a 5-kilometre road race and possibly a road mile championship to be added later. In a smart move, the CEO of World Athletics, the former Olympic hurdler John Ridgeon from Britain, also announced that mass participation races will be part of the programme for these established and new events. In normal times, the mass marathons, such as in London, New York, Berlin and Chicago, attract thousands of non-elite runners. This global running championship, separate from such big city marathons, has the potential to combine their interests with heightening the awareness of the performances by elite runners in the same races, such as the half marathon, 5 kilometres and the mile. That could bring benefits not just in publicity, but make those events more attractive to commercial sponsors who are a vital source of revenue for any sport. As John Ridgeon said when announcing this series, the global community of recreational runners, numbering millions, will be able to come together to celebrate their passion. Now, while the concept has been launched, World Athletics will keenly await which cities might be interested to stage the inaugural Road Running Championships in 2023. There is understandably much discussion backstage among the sport in general as to when conditions in staging events might return to normal. The more optimistic officials and managers suggest autumn next year. Others are more inclined to favour 2 years from now. But however this turns out, World Athletics has struck an optimistic and constructive note for the future with this announcement. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks to Andy Edwards in London for that report. That's it for this edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thanks to producer Mukbil Yabaro. And thanks to you for listening. Keep it here on The Voice of America for International Edition with Steve Miller coming up next. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.